Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast Half Full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wandrich.
Hello. Welcome.
We have a very special guest. There are three of us in the room today, all the way from the West Coast. We're able to pull Jeffrey Morgenthaler here.
Hi, guys.
Welcome. We have a copy, or actually a stack of your books on the table, Drinking Distilled, which just came out not even a month ago, I guess.
So. April 10th, yeah, about a month.
When, and is this something, this is your second book?
It's my second book, yep. Bar Book, Elements Cocktail Technique was first, and this one, Drinking Distilled, is number two. Totally different book, you know. Yeah. I thought that maybe I would try this, like, serious book, fun book, serious book, fun book, serious fun book thing.
And the first book was mostly aimed at professional bartenders and, like, serious
amateur. And home bartender. Yeah, anybody that wants to make a drink is right. Who that was aimed at, you know. It was intended to be as professional as possible, but not just aimed to professionals.
This one is definitely a little bit of a different track, right? I
mean, totally. It's for drinkers. not the people that make the drinks. It's for people that drink the drinks.
What we're talking about today is sort of rules for drinking, right? Rules for drinking in craft cocktail bars and – you know, a lot of
elsewhere
what, and elsewhere
and home
and home. Right. And I think a lot of what's in the book is about that. That's sort of the general theme of the book. And it's, I'd say, one part instructional, one part satirical. And
yeah, there's a lot of shit talking in there. Yeah, for sure.
There has to be when you're making rules.
Yeah. And there has to be when you're talking about drinking.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's like, I've never approached drinking with some sort of like, you know, holier thou.
My first drinks book was this thing called Esquire Drinks, and we put a whole bunch of actual rules in there, like rule number 428.
Right.
And some of them were pretty dumb.
Some of them were, it seemed like they were kind of satirical as well.
Yeah.
Because I, of course, researched that for this.
And that was an Esquire thing, like always, you know, there were all types of rules about, you know, and I can imagine people, you know, in the middle of the night would wake up and be like, oh. Like light bulb, let me write that down in the morning, this is a really good rule. Like,
I mean, one of them was like, never drink anything named after a part of your body normally covered by underwear.
Right.
Which at the time was
still
probably
holds up.
A fairly good rule if you want to be treated seriously as an adult. And that was the concern
now
back
then.
Now
I'm sitting here trying to think of every drink I know besides the slippery nipple, buttery nipple.
Thank you for derailing this conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to be silent for the rest of the podcast.
We can have to start making a list.
Yeah.
Your first book and then this book, do you think they're, you know, sort of based upon your experience running Clyde Common, your award-winning bar?
My award-winning bar? It's based on my experience as a bartender. I've been doing this for 22 years full-time.
Wow.
I still do it.
In Portland?
I come from Eugene. I started tending bar in Eugene, which is a college town, south of Portland by about 100 miles. And I worked there for 12 years, something like that. And so I've been in Portland for about 10.
I see a lot of your Eugene experience in this book.
There's a ton
also.
Of, because I worked in like college bars and dives and like real bars. You know, Portland gave me a lot of experience with like kind of fancy bars, but Eugene is where I learned about like drinking.
And, right, for sure. And I mean, and Clyde Common, which is in the East Hotel, right?
Uh-huh. But
when that opened, how long ago? It seems.
They opened in 2007. I was not there at the time. I was still in Eugene. I didn't come in until year 1.5. And they had already had, I think, 3 bar managers in that time.
Wow.
How do you think the clientele has changed in the rules they need at, say, Clyde Common from when you started there till now?
I mean, I know how the clientele has changed in bars in general over the past 20 years. I'm not going to talk about what kind of rules the regulars at Clyde Common need.
Are there posted rules? Like
No. That's another rule. There's no rules.
Bar rules is a fairly new phenomenon. The original rules were no shirt, no shoes, no service, right?
Or don't swear was in many bars.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's like we're trying to have a nice bar here.
Yeah.
Or no women allowed back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, no that religion was big, or politics.
No black people allowed. Right. Those were very common in American bars. Which is, you know, not all rules are good by any means.
Yeah. Thankfully, a lot of those rules are gone.
Yeah.
But I think in the modern era, we've morphed into probably thanks to Sasha Postkrovsky and mm-hmm. Milk and Honey in New York, where he had, you know, he opened up, you know, sort of one of the proto craft cocktail bars. And I guess depending upon who you ask or the story, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, what I've always heard was that, you know, the co-op board or the owner of the building didn't really want to rent him the space, except, you know, for him to agree to the fact that, like, there'd be no sign, there'd be no telephone, there'd be no line outside. Mm-hmm. Like, they would kind of, you know, try to limit the number of people there to keep the sound down.
He wanted his clientele to be quiet because he didn't want trouble with the owner.
Right.
But also, at the time, almost all bars were, like, kind of woohoo bars.
Uh-huh.
Right. You know, those were the bars that everybody knew, coming from the 70s, coming from singles bars. And Sasha was... I mean, Sasha had a varied experience. He'd been in the army. Right. He'd done a bunch of different things.
He wanted a respectable
grown-up people's bar.
He was no Tom Cruise.
He was no Tom Cruise. And he just thought that stuff was dumb and kind of obnoxious. Right. Now, is there room for those bars? Still, yes. But he did something kind of important.
And I think that kind of morphed where people, you know, he had these rules literally posted out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of developed where you had other bartenders and other bars like, you know, our friend Jim Meehan's bar, PDT, mm-hmm. in New York, you know, literally had typed up rules, I think, in the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. They still do, you know, and a lot of it, you know, it sort of evolved from, you know, the, you know, no yelling, no, you know, some of the rules were like no hitting on, you know, single women at the bar, no star fucking, you know, all these crazy, it went from mm-hmm. almost the practical to the, I don't know, the theoretical or what they,
yeah, you know. I mean, after a while, I always... you start to see them kind of becoming no fun of any kind.
Right.
Yes, definitely. Know? Yeah.
And that's a problem too.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of them came from a good place. But
mm-hmm. And for a specific bar.
Right.
You know, they weren't for every bar.
Right.
If you have a large bar in a busy area and you're putting like Sasha Petrosky rules in there, that's kind of not fun.
Bar for that. Yeah. That's the wrong bar.
Yeah, it's the wrong bar.
And I think the problem also is that a lot of the consumers coming into these bars started, you know, adapting these rules or coming up with all these crazy rules for drinking cocktails or scotch or single malt. And suddenly you have layers upon layers of rules.
Now it's like guests telling other guests how they're supposed to be drinking. That's certainly one of the things that I like really wanted to address in the book. It's always men. There's a whole section on gendered drinking. It's always men. Right. It's always men telling other men or other women how to drink, you know, how to drink their whiskey. They're drinking the wrong whiskey. They're drinking their gin the wrong way. They don't know.
You're drinking that out of a cocktail glass, and that doesn't...
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Why are you doing that?
I'm an elevated drinker, you know. I've been reading books on cocktails. I've been, you know, I know what I'm, you know, so I'm going to tell, oh, you're having your whiskey on the rocks? You're having a pink drink? Meh.
Has anybody quoted your first book to you, not realizing that you wrote that book?
Yes and no. I mean, I have a great story. I was in a bar, you know, kind of a craft cocktail-y bar, and I was with a friend, and she introduced me, and the guy was like, I know you from somewhere. This is actually not really related to rules, but it's a great story. He's like, I know you from somewhere. And I'm like, I don't know, man. And he kind of circled back, and you know, it was like really bugging me, like he knew who I was. And I went to the bathroom, and I came back. And when I came back, he's got this look on his face, and he's like, I figured it out. And sitting in my place was a book with a Sharpie on top of it. And he was like, I would love it if I could get your signature. You know, it's really, this book has like made a huge difference in my life.
Was it the right book?
It was. So I signed, This Is Not My Book, Jeffrey Morgenthaler, in the Death & Company cocktail bar, which was amazing.
I've signed Dale DeGroff's book as Dale DeGroff before.
Completely. Completely.
With the martini.
The whole thing.
I think we've reached that point where it's like in that scene in Annie Hall where like the guy.
That's exactly what I think about. Nothing of my work.
Right. You know, Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan.
It's like, how dare you? You know, the guy's like, I'm a professor. You know, he's like, And that's, I almost feel like, you know, that's going to happen to you, one of you.
That has happened to me, actually, with people, somebody at the bar spouting off all this history of some drink and making a real kind of spectacle out of themselves. And, you know, you're not making it right, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wandrich says, excuse me, actually don't say that.
Yeah, exactly.
Read the book, because I'm sitting right here.
I've seen that online where people are like, Jeffrey Morgenthaler hates vodka, and you're an idiot for drinking vodka. Yeah. And I'm like, there's a bottle of my vodka that? In my freezer right now. Like, shut up.
I mean, I think a lot of what you're talking about in the book and in the story that Wayne Curtis wrote about it when it came out is that they don't want to come to the bar to drink anymore. They want to come to the bar to discuss what they're drinking.
It's so rough. That's the one thing that's like really changed for me in the past 20 years behind the bars. People used to come into the bar and have a drink and talk about music or talk about sports or talk about like the neighborhood or whatever. And now people come into a bar and sit and talk about the drink that they're drinking.
It's a cocktail appreciation club.
It really is. And it gets, and one of the rules is not necessarily don't do that, but as a bartender, it's really tiring. I mean, I've been listening, like it's the same conversation 100 times a night past decade.
It's basically like dinner theater. I mean, you've gone from almost being like invisible, right? Where you just drop off the drink and like people would wait for the bartender to leave to resume their conversation to the fact that they now want you to perform.
Exactly.
To talk about chartreuse or whatever.
I really missed that side of bartending when it was just like, here's your drink. We're going to make it well. No, whatever it was.
Right,
you know,
sometimes
it's vodka tonic, gin and tonic, whatever. Make it well, and then let's just not talk about it again until you need another one, you know? But, like,
if it's slow and you want it, and you want to talk about, like, history of things, I'll talk about it.
And I'm not saying I don't like talking about that stuff. I've obviously been writing about this stuff for the past 15 years. But it's not just you at the bar. It's you and everybody else at the bar that wants to talk to me about
drinks. Yeah, if
people
start trying to pin me down to talk about history, I'll put them on hold when I'm
just tired
behind
of
the bar, and I'll go and talk to like somebody else about something else just to show that, you know, we don't have to just talk about this.
I comped half a round or half a tab for these two women that were in last week because they sat down, they ordered fancy drinks, and then we sat and talked about music
for
45 minutes, and I was just like, God bless you.
I'm going to assume they called Jerry Thomas the professor, not because he held forth on the history of cocktails at his bar between rounds.
Yeah, he might have a little bit. Things change behind you know, this culture. Right now we've got a lot of geeks, but even that's starting to get squished down a little bit. Mm-hmm. I see there are a lot of bars, there are several here in New York and elsewhere, where they're starting to move away from the geekery and go back to a little more the hospitality, the amusing conversation, the jokes. A place like Ticonderoga Club, for instance, in Atlanta, where they've got like a fake history of their club and they've got all this amusing stuff and they've got like the ritual of the captain's chair. There's one captain's chair at the bar. And so that's kind of fun.
And I think even for your book, which is theoretically a book of rules, like you get to a point where there are no rules, right?
I mean, there are some rules. don't be an asshole at the bar.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're definitely
we're
rules.
We're paring down the rules too.
Yeah,
we're
paring down the rules. I mean, back to Sasha Petrosky, like that was a very important moment in the history of bars when that happened, and those rules went up, and everything sort of changed.
Well, those rules were basically aimed at people who didn't know how not to be an asshole behind at the bar.
Exactly.
You know, because there'd been 20 years of bartenders had given up, especially bar owners weren't enforcing like the rules.
Well, and people, I think other bars have sort of bastardized his original rules, and it's like, you know, no hats inside. We're like, okay, you know, it's like not 1840. Like, if you really, if you want to wear a hat, like, we can just judge you from a fashion perspective, but like, you know, there's not like a rule.
You're not messing up the bar.
Yeah, you're not going to screw up the whole bar because you're wearing a fucking hat.
I think Spurs, on the other hand.
Spurs.
That's how it should be bad.
Spurs,
for sure.
Spurs are pretty bad.
Yeah.
We can all agree on that.
I mean, a lot of those, I think a lot of those things, you know, and I think he got it. He was getting to something with the, you know, don't approach a woman if you didn't arrive with her rule. That really is a more general rule that's like, be respectful.
He wanted women to be able to drink in peace at his bar without getting hit on.
A successful bar is one where a woman can come, sit by herself, read a book, and not have to deal with just a bunch of shitheads, you know?
Exactly.
I think sometimes, you know, a lot of what you do, Dave, is sort of debunk, you know, people's presumptions about what bars were like 100 years ago. And I think we all have this idea of this mythical bar that existed, you know.
This erudite gentleman's club where everybody was like, yeah.
Probably I'm not going to rolling dice for drinks.
Rolling dice. It still smelled like piss in there.
And, you know, and they drank pink drinks in stemmed glasses.
Exactly.
And that was not a problem for them at all.
That's another one that we just
With egg white foam.
It was manly to drink all that, and that nobody thought about it.
Yeah,
because who else would drink it? I mean,
that's a big pet peeve of mine, the stem.
You know,
the gender.
Yeah. I was in LA and I was hosting a dinner and this guy said, I love margaritas. I said, great, so do I. He said, but I don't like the glass. I said, oh,
what's the glass?
Like the stemmed,
like the cactus glass?
Or any kind of stemmed. I don't like having to drink it out of a stemmed glass.
Okay.
And this was like a very manly man. Like he was like way more ripped than I am. I mean, I'm pretty ripped, and he was.
You're huge.
I'm pretty much Lou Ferrigno here, and he was like the rock. But like literally, he was really. And I was like, you're worried about not seeming manly enough. I was like, well, why don't you just order it in a rocks glass?
Yeah, you can just say margarita and rocks, and you can just skip the whole conversation about how you don't know how to use a glass.
His mind was blown. I was like, and if you really wanted to go crazy, you could have it with mezcal, and that would be you could have the smokiest bomb of a margarita, and like nobody would ever question.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
In your manhood, or you could just have a regular margarita and enjoy it
and
like
not
you
give
want
a shit
there.
About what anybody thinks about what you're doing, which I find to be, you know,
also
quite butch.
The other one, that drives me crazy is not necessarily like the emasculating quality of that glass. It's the I'll just spill it everywhere. I don't know how to use that glass. Yeah. Like you should have been practicing this in college.
Yeah.
Like you should know how to use a glass. Okay, you're a grown person.
I mean, I grew up drinking in old man bars in New York. And if you ordered a martini, which had the most alcohol of any drink in the place, and the bartenders knew how to make because they were old, it came in a stemmed glass. And I learned how to drink those.
To the top.
I learned how to drink those while being heavily intoxicated.
Absolutely.
Because I was drinking those.
Right.
You should know how to use a glass. You should know how to use a knife and a fork as well.
That's being an adult.
That's just being a grown-up. Yeah, man or woman. That's just being a grown-up. You should know how to use basic place settings. You should know how to use a glass. You should know how to, drive a stick shit. That's my. Thank you. Sorry.
We're back with rules. We're back with rules. We almost got it here.
Manning Josh.
I'm in New York, nobody knows how to drive a car here.
Certainly not a manual.
I can steal a subway train.
Right.
I'll bet you can.
Sometimes reading, your book and some of the anecdotes, they almost seem, made up. Like, who would believe that nobody could use a martini glass? But I imagine most of these things, if not all of them, have come from actually.
I've not made any of these stories up.
Yeah.
You don't need to make stories
up.
Or
maybe I would want them to be made up. I don't want to believe that they're true.
You don't want to believe half the crap that goes on out there. It's rough. I mean, it's where people can be their best and their worst in a bar.
And you don't want to judge people, but you want them to kind of be better sometimes. You see them often, as you said, you see them at their worst.
I want them to treat themselves better. I want them to treat their neighbors better and my coworkers better.
Do you have a favorite story in the book that led to, one of your rules or debunking?
One of them is the story about it's the warning of how careful you should be with my gallon of margaritas recipe. And it's a very detailed account of a bunch of bartenders out in the woods drinking these margaritas like they're going to take them away. Mm-hmm. I'm like, here's a really great recipe for a gallon of margaritas for your party.
Right.
And then I say, but be careful because they're dangerous. And then I go on for two pages and tell you just how dangerous they are.
Yeah, people aren't used to that. They're used to a lot of mix and just a little bit of margarita.
Yep.
Right.
That was one of my favorite ones, right?
Do you think that, as you you're, you know, traveling around the world, you know, going to different bars, you know, doing, you know, guest bar shifts on occasion. doing bar shifts.
Your favorite thing.
My favorite thing. Yeah. Guest bar shifts.
Do you, that's a whole other podcast. We'll get to that episode sometime later. Is, you know, are the rules that you see, like, drinkers and bartenders observing in other countries, you know, are they different than America? Or has the, like, sort of milk and honey set of rules, you know, gone viral?
That has gone viral. That is pervasive in every sort of, you know, self-proclaimed craft cocktail bar in the world.
That and the Edison bulb.
Yeah, it's almost like I don't really drink that much, so I don't really anymore. So, you know, when I first kind of started traveling and exploring bars, it would be like hit 10 craft cocktail bars. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back in 2008, sure. Right? Like, where it was just so excited to go to London. Like, let's hit every single cocktail bar here.
And you could do it.
And now it's like, when I go to city and I come home, people say, oh, did you go to, you know, so-and-so? And I don't want to appear disenchanted, but like they're sort of all the same, you know. It's a cookie cutter of the rules and the drinks and the, and you know, I just they're sort of worldwide, they're kind of all the same.
There's one thing though that I've noticed, which is kind of interesting, and I might just be wrong about this, which has obviously been known to happen on a daily
rarely.
One effect of this kind of rules culture that I think is a positive thing is in craft cocktail bars, I don't see a lot of people heavily intoxicated. I see people drink a lot, but they know that they're not supposed to behave really drunk, so they kind of keep a little more control on themselves than I see in other bars.
I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you. I'm going to agree with you in that, like, yes, and part of the reason why I moved up into nicer bars was because I was tired of having my life threatened by very dangerous drunk people, you know, and I wanted to be more of a bartender than a policeman. So I would agree that, like, the nicer bars do have less kind of problems with inebriation.
Well, just overt, like, but I all, sloppy drunk.
Yeah, but I will also disagree with you in that I would wager that you probably aren't going to a lot of these bars on Friday or Saturday night.
I was just
going
to
say Friday or Saturday night, as Dave Wondrich, that you're probably going there on Sunday.
I'm a little too smart to go there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know better. So.
I remember Kenta Goto saying that years ago at Pegu, and he was like, I don't work Saturday for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, you should come here on a Saturday.
And they do, like, it's less, yes, but they are guzzling down $14 cocktails they're going out of style. And they're, you know, treating them like shots.
In over the many years,
for sure,
often enough to remind me not to do it.
Yeah,
there you see problems.
Yeah, so I agree and disagree. Like, you know, in general, for the most part, yeah, they're less problematic than hard drinking clubs or anything like that.
I think people have kind of internalized the rules of, like, I got to remember to behave here.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but those are the people who come, and those are the people who are regulars who come not on Friday or Saturday.
That's exactly right.
On Friday or Saturday, you get the newbies and the
and I would say that the
occasional drinkers, and those people are trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, the fail-safe, though, I think, is that a lot of the cocktails are smaller, right? The glasses are...
Yeah, but they're much stronger.
They're much stronger. We were pouring like 1.25 ounce shots at the Veterans Hall that I was working at in the early 2000s. And we're pouring, you know, you can get
a highball would be 1.25 ounce.
Hell yeah.
Watered scotch.
Remember those little martini glasses that were like this tall that you filled with the brim? That was like maybe 2.5 ounces, you know, shaken.
Stronger but smaller though. Something. I mean, like compared
to smaller. They are well. The Birdbath martinis,
right? Exactly.
Those are gone.
Fortunately, in many places are gone.
I was in PDT with a friend, and he was like, "These drinks are tiny."
Yeah.
And he was like, I just had like 3 of them. Like, this is great. He's like, I want more. I'm like,
just wait
stand
a minute.
Stand up.
I remember, you know, being, you know, at Little Branch, and Lucinda Sterling, who now runs a number of bars in New York, shushing my group, you know, being like, keep it. And, you know, we weren't particularly rowdy, but maybe this was 7 o'clock at night. We were a little enthused,
yeah.
And she was like, shh, you know, keep it. And I appreciate it when you're there on like a date or you're trying to have a conversation. But when you are with a group, it at least in New York, it gets hard. Like, it's one of these things where. It almost like, you know, people want a bar recommendation. I have to give them a survey
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
What do you like to drink? How many people? Are you going to be loud? Are you going to like one food? Mm-hmm. Are you going to like, are more people going to come later? Because that's the problem. Are you all going to be on time? Like, am I going to?
I was checking off all the pet peeves of every bartender in New York.
And it's like,
here's your recommendation. Don't mention me.
Right, exactly.
They've kind of become nightclubs.
Right.
You know, and they're not, a lot of them are not cool with that. But they've become like the cool version of nightclubs. Mm-hmm. And they haven't quite evolved to meet that demand necessarily.
The pretty people go there to see and be seen.
Yeah, exactly. It's the place to go out. And on a Friday or Saturday, that's a place where you go with a whole group of people and go to party and meet people and all that. Because, I mean, the nightclubs no longer get any press.
No, and they're closing.
Other bars don't get any press.
Yeah. Right.
What gets press? Cocktail bars.
Yeah,
that's it. They've completely climbed to the top of the ecosystem.
I would say the adjunct to that is the whiskey bar with.
Absolutely.
Like or mezcal, like
plus whiskey.
Right, you have to. You know, if you're going to have a liquor spirit focused bar, it has to be so over the top where you have a wall of every possible.
God, I would hate to work in one of those places.
I don't even know how you'd keep it all straight.
The clientele.
The collectors.
The collectors and the, I don't know what it is. You say mezcal, I don't know what it is about mezcal drinkers that have to announce to the world that they're drinking mezcal. I'm having mezcal.
Well, because I'm much better informed than you are.
I'm much better informed than you are. Yeah. It's I remember the single malt guys in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. They were the same way, what do you have for scotch? You're like, I have Johnny Walker Black Label. They're like, garbage. I only drink single malt mezcal or single malt scotch.
Can we make another rule that if you ask what we have for scotch, we tell you three scotches and you have to drink one of them?
Right. Yeah. And we decide
which
one. We can't
say what else you have.
Right. Yeah.
Drink one of these, then I'll tell you three more.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
No, we don't have a list.
No, we don't have a list. Yeah.
No, you can't see that bottle.
Oh, God.
Well, is there one rule, if you could enact it for all bars, what is there one cardinal rule besides don't be an asshole that you think that most of the bars should have?
I mean, the it sounds trite, but treat everybody in the bar, staff and guest with respect is the one that I see violated the most often. So many times it's the staff is here to serve me. The rest of the guests are here for my enjoyment. I'm to be the center of attention. And it's just, it makes for a really, really hard night. I've got people like that aren't mindful of the other people in the room, especially the people that are working really hard.
You could say treat everybody like your friends, but then you see how these people treat
their friends like shit. Yeah, I don't want to say that.
Yeah. That was Sasha's thing. Is like his rule was. I think your rule is absolutely correct. His rule is don't bring anybody here who you wouldn't leave at home in your house.
Right.
Well, some of these people, they're leaving terrible people.
At home. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the rule that I see violated most often is just general kindness to others.
Yeah.
You see that violated in all kinds of bars.
Patience. I would like to see more patience, mm-hmm. We're working really hard to get to you as quickly as we can. And, trying to pull a scam, get ahead of the other guests, trying to, wave something in somebody's face to get a drink so that you can get one faster, so every sort of trick in the book.
Wait, that doesn't work? Waving money in your face doesn't?
No, it doesn't.
Mm. Dave and I are going to have to find new tricks.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Snapping.
I'm sitting here thinking, how the hell am I going to get a drink next time?
Yeah.
Because they always come to me last.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like banging on the bar top. That's my favorite.
Holding your hand up over your head and waving as somebody runs by with a tray.
I think in some ways also, hopefully, as we pull back on some of these complicated drinks, that the bartenders will have more time to make drinks. We got to a point where so many of these drinks were so complicated and took so much time to make.
Well, that's a crappy bar though. If it was a bar where the drink really took that much time, that was somebody that didn't know how to run a bar and put enough people on staff or run a menu. That's not.
And yet you do see it a lot in bars that have
But those are shitty bars.
Oh, well, I'm not gonna name names. What about you say that?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the tweezer mixology where every garnish is
but that's great. What I'm saying is, like, that is great. You have to execute it quickly.
Yeah, you do.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're a shitty bar.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking, look, I mean, employees only, you know, on a Saturday night at 3 in the morning, the bar
those guys
is
are fast.
Banging
seven
it out.
Deep, and yeah. everybody has a drink.
I had to make drinks once at a table next to Dushan Zarek. Oh, God.
Jesus.
And I was moving fairly fast because I had a simple drink and I was prepared. Mm-hmm. But man, he was making like twice as many drinks.
Yeah, and he
and, it was, and I couldn't even see how he was doing it.
And yeah,
he seemed to be doing the same stuff I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Dushan and Jason, the founders of Employees Only, I mean, they had come from a kind of nightclub, high volume Pravda in New York, where they were used to dealing with crowds. And a lot of the new bartenders don't have the background that you have, Jeffrey, mm-hmm. where, you know, working in all types of bars, and the only type of bar that they know is a craft bar. Like, they don't like that kind of speed and the experience of working, satisfying a lot of different guests at one time is something that they never learned.
Which is great if they want to have a 5-year career. But I think that if you want to have a long lasting, I mean, part of the reason why I'm still here today is just because bartending has always been what I do for a living.
Right.
So whether it's mixology or speed or whatever, I'll just be doing it.
Flair.
You flair. Well, I can't do that because I'm too uncoordinated. I would like to, but I'm not.
That's a special kind of tweezer mixology, as far as I'm concerned.
That really
is. Because you're doing stuff that takes extra time.
Yep.
Right.
You know, for a show.
And you better have an extra, you better double the staff.
Exactly.
Have a bunch of people juggling shit. Like
exactly.
Clowns.
And a budget for a lot of broken glassware. Mm-hmm. If I'm on
duty,
if I'm on duty, totally. I break everything.
Yeah, well, you do.
Yeah, that's what's that, man. But the bar would be packed. It's like NASCAR. Everybody would come to see it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, there goes
Mom. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, people go out by Jeffrey's book, Drinking Distilled, A User's Manual.
It really is a lovely and amusing book.
Thank you.
We'll be back with a new episode of Life Behind Bars soon. And in the meantime, we'll go out and get some drinks. I'll show some flair moves. Dave will
wave his hands at the bartender.
Flash a little money.
With money in each one of them.
I'll pull an Irish goodbye and sneak out the back.
Yeah, there you go.
Sounds like a perfect night.
All good.
Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.